Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello, and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so excited that you're here, and I am so excited to introduce you to our incredible guest today. This is a young woman who I had the pleasure of doing some anti-racism work with, and she is just so impressive. We always have the best conversations, and so I'm excited to have one of those conversations with her for you today. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Kaseba Chibwith. She is a junior at Loyola University in Chicago, and she is majoring in criminology and criminal justice. She shares a love for public speaking and advocating for those whose voices are not being heard. She is beyond passionate about juvenile justice reform and aspires to be an attorney that will change the world one trial at a time. I love that. Her favorite quote is, "You must always have faith in people. And most importantly, you must always believe in yourself." That's by Elle Woods. Join me today in welcoming Kaseba Chibwith to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hi, Kaseba. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Carrie. Thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Kaseba, and I currently attend Loyola U Chicago. I am an upcoming junior majoring in criminology and criminal justice, minoring in psychology and women and gender studies.
That is awesome. I'm so excited to have you here and to have this conversation today. And before we get started, can you just talk about, like, why did you want to come on the Inclusion First Project? What made you say yes to continuing this conversation around anti-racism and activism and figuring out, you know, what we can do personally to create the world that we want to live in?
The reason that I wanted to continue this conversation is because I just believe that despite there being a lot of progress that has been made, there's still a lot of work to do for the future. And we haven't reached that goal where equality has been met all across the board. And I just think that it's super important, especially with this pandemic and the recent racial attacks with, you know, Stop Asian Hate, Black Lives Matter last summer, all of these events have really just made me realize that there's still a lot of work to be done to get to, you know, the world that I want to see. And I think a lot of other people would like to see as well.
Absolutely. So Kaseba, what does it mean to you to be an activist here in 2021?
Being an activist in 2021 for me means being able to spread awareness, educate, and to using your voice. I think in 2021, there's just so much usage of social media platforms to the point where it's really no excuse to not do your part. I think that's what's changed activism from before, is just all of this access that can be put forth into the world, into your space constantly at any given time. So to really kind of avoid the social injustices of the world in this country, really, you'd really have to do a really like
you'd work hard at it.
A lot of effort. Yeah, work hard to not see or not even have a clue as to what's going on or what you can do to help out.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing. What is your special, unique CASEPA brand of activism look like right now?
I would have to say it's this. I think that's just who I am, using my voice. I've always used my voice off my social media platforms, on my social media platforms, and I just think it's very unique to me because I feel like I have a great way of getting people to understand and to listen and to not mm-hmm. be on defense mode. Mm-hmm. And I would say that along with using my voice, I think my personality and my energy is what sets me apart because I definitely feel like people can sense that I'm coming from a great place and I'm genuinely giving people the opportunity to get out there, maybe things that they wouldn't be able to say out in public that would be taken the wrong way. I think I just also have a lot of patience as well. And I think the combination of using my voice, the patience and my personality really creates a safe space for people to have the appropriate dialogue necessary for them to see, to seek out the change that they would like to seek out as well.
Yeah. I love this idea of being a safe space. And it sounds like you're an ally for allies, basically. Yes. An ally for allies. And, you know, welcoming these kinds of conversations. And, you know, we've gotten to talk and gotten to know each other over, you know, this last year and everything that's going on. You've been a guest on the Generation Z takeover of the Inclusion First Inclusion First Project. And so you went to an all-girls school. And I would love to talk about, like, what does activism look like in the context of, like, your experience as, you know, a graduate of an all-girls school? And sorry, I'm totally going off script. I just wanted to, you know.
No, that's like, fine.
Because really, this podcast is about what it looks like to practice everyday anti-racism, to practice everyday activism. And it's these both small and large things that we're doing as we're navigating our spaces that take us into those roles and take us down that path. And that's why some of the stories that we've talked about, you know, I feel like you're constantly like in this role of like activist and you're shifting and moving forward and backward, depending upon what the need calls. And so I would love if there's, you know, if you can share a little bit about that experience and what activism looks like in the context of being you in your all-girls school.
It was definitely questioning. You have to ask a lot of questions. I always had to ask a lot of questions when things were coming from, you know, a place of ignorance. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to say, what exactly do you mean by that? Have you ever put yourself in the shoes of, you know, a person of color or my shoes? Have you ever thought about what the world looks like for some of us and how we have to navigate through the world? And oftentimes through the questioning and asking these questions, you get to the root of where their ideas and where the mindset comes from. Because sometimes, you know, when it comes to discussing social justice issues or specifically issues on race, people tend to speak boldly, particularly non-BIPOC individuals tend to speak boldly. And it's very difficult to sit and listen to somebody have an opinion on them not having the experience, mm-hmm. right? And having to remind people that just because you've never been exposed to people or other people's situations doesn't mean that it doesn't exist and it doesn't mean that it's not happening. So for me, I found that asking questions was me putting my best forward when it came to activism mixed with saying my truth and my experiences, because at the end of the day, you cannot argue or dispute an individual's truth or experiences. And I think that's what created the space for conversation, because sometimes I feel that you want people to know that they're being heard. When people feel like they're being heard, they're willing to be honest and also give you the same, versus if on the first attack, I just go and say, you know, that was ignorant. That was, you know, that was racist. Because when you, you know, when you call anyone any type of thing, you're automatically going to be, you know, on defense mode, like racist, ignorant. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Especially if it truly was not, those were not your intentions. So to me, I find that the questions lead you to see where it was coming from. And based off the answers that you get from the questions, it'll help you to gauge whether or not a person truly was educated or they are educated and for whatever reason came to the conclusion that they came to. And then that's when I kind of bring in the heat and the fire. And it's kind of like, okay, there's no room for educating right now. It's kind of time to lay down the facts. And that's when I bring on the heat. So I like to give people the benefit of the doubt first. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel, for me, I don't like when people make assumptions about me and don't give me the chance to speak on my own things. So sure. I think that it's only fair that I do the same, even if I'm nervous about what the other person is going to say. I feel like everyone, maybe that's just the future lore in me, that everybody has the right to kind of just give their little spiel first.
Yeah. So it sounds like you use questions to interrupt ignorance and to interrupt racism as well, and then based on what happens after that, you go one direction or another to help to educate people, put people in their place, whatever it's called for at that moment in time.
Right. And I want to just also clarify that I know there might be some people saying, you know, it's not our place to educate. For me I always have to speak up, because the one person that might be saying the thing that's ignorant or possibly racist or whatever it is that they're saying, when I'm speaking, it's not even as if I'm trying to educate them. It's the other people in the room as well, who you don't know where they stand. And it's just to also, I think, for me, setting my boundaries and kind of saying, I'm not going to be putting up with that, and I will call it out every single time, and so that other people in the room are able to reflect and think about maybe their own instances with things like that and how to do better. Because the person that's saying the ignorant things, they might not be open to understanding, but other people might be. And I think that's, to me, I'm looking at how many more people can I impact than just this one person. Like, my focus is not necessarily on the individual per se, but just to make sure that everyone is kind of also in the loop and on the same page.
I think that's super wise, because we all are placed in these unique spheres of influence, and we don't know who is watching us and who's listening. And there's always someone. And so when you're having this, what looks like a one-on-one discussion, the people around absolutely are tuning in. They're listening. They're seeing the reactions. They're getting information, whether they're rejecting it or accepting it at that time. It doesn't matter, because this thing is happening. This experience is happening. This interruption is happening, which makes you think about when you've done things, what you might say, what you might do. And think twice, especially if you're like, oh, they got like a harsh, in quotes, reaction. Well, maybe there's something there that I need to investigate before I put myself in that position as well. And this is why what you say and what you don't say, what you do and what you don't do always matters, because you're influencing more than just the person in front of you. You're influencing a lot more than that.
100%.
And we didn't say this, Kaseba, but can you speak a little bit about kind of the racial demographic of the girls' school that you went to, just so we can get a picture of that? Because, you know, you're here, this activist, Kaseba, beautiful, brown, powerful. And what does it look like around you?
I got to say, what it looked like around me was, it was definitely, I would say it was majority predominantly white. And then second after that would be predominantly Hispanic, and then the rest of us, which was, I would say, like, Asian, and then the few of us good brown chocolate girls. Literally, I could count on one hand how many Black students were in that school, just so to say, like, compared to, like, the Asian girls, I could use probably two of my hands, at least 20, you know, 25. But the Black girls, we were on one hand. So that was kind of the demographic, and still is. So it was quite a lot to work with, because not only are you dealing with the lack of your own people being there and your identity kind of being lost, but you're also having to navigate through privilege. And interesting enough, I will say it was definitely a tough battle sometimes, because I was working with my privilege. I think being able to, on some level, understand the demographic, it made it easier to create my own guide, you know, for activism and how I was choosing to move around and operate, because I could speak the language, if that makes sense. I could speak in a way that would get them to understand, because especially when you're dealing with more privileged people, you really have to understand what that privilege means, what that privilege looks like, what that privilege, you know, causes the actions and the world around. It's not, the level of privilege takes it up a stake. It's not the same thing as maybe if you were at a predominantly white institution with people who don't have privilege in terms of, like, class, and just a variety of other factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the socioeconomic levels are just different. And so it's really interesting because, you know, we talk about privilege and checking your privilege and white privilege specifically, and people forget that we all have privilege. And so I think it's interesting what you just said. You're, like, navigating your own privilege, and then you're also navigating white privilege and other privilege as well, right? Because there's different races all in this. Not everyone is affluent at this school, but it sounds like there's a good percentage. So you're navigating privilege and your privilege and other people's privilege. So say more about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think when it comes to having conversations about white privilege, it kind of puts a wall up a little bit. People kind of go, what do you mean white privilege? I have privilege because I'm white. yes. And white privilege doesn't mean you don't struggle, you don't have issues, you know. It just means there are certain things that you either will be able to get away with, or things that you will gain because you are white, the way some of us would not. But that also doesn't mean the rest of us don't have privilege. And so for me, having to recognize my privilege, which is what catapulted me into, you can't go through this experience being quiet, because it was already a small number of Black girls already there. And I can't have this mindset of one of them is going to do it. It was literally like one Black girl per class. So it was kind of like, it's not really affecting, you know, the whole school. What am I going to do in terms of my own class? And just thinking about how I'm seen differently. And I knew that 100% that I wasn't seen as, you know, the negative stereotypes that are placed on Black people. And that's why I really couldn't sit and go through my high school years not speaking up about things and kind of, you know, getting my experience, because I was just thinking about, there's so many people here in this space that their first exposure with color is here. And when we graduate, you know, we're going to go into another chapter. We're going to go into, you know, college and meeting different people. And I just couldn't sit with the fact that some of these people could go out and inflict pain or harm on, like, BIPOC community. And I just knew that the step for that would just have to be talking and educating, because, you know, you can't expect everyone to be like me. You can't expect every other Black person you encounter to be like me. I might be patient. I might be willing to say, you know what, that wasn't the, you should not have said that. Somebody else might, you know, snap and let you have it, rightfully so. And to me, it was kind of like, well, I'll be the stepping ground point. I'll give it to you as nicely as I possibly can. What you choose to do with this information once you have it and how you go outside of here, I can't defend that. I can't save you, because, you know, it gets to a point where we're not five, we're not four. You really have to be taking these things into consideration. And also, I think that's why it's important that when you're getting this information, you have to look at, how can I apply this in my life? How have I not been applying this in my life? And, you know, going forward and really being able to be, you know, a decent human being. And that's why I think the term, you know, being an anti-racist, it's active. It is always active. And it means that you have to be aware. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier in regards to asking questions and questioning things. When you're moving throughout the world, whether you are a person of color, specifically non-people of color, when things are happening, you really have to be asking, you know, these questions. Why is that happening to that person? Would that happen to me? Why did that person just treat so-and-so like that, but I didn't get that experience? The wheels have to be turning, because so often people want to say, oh my gosh, here we go again, you know, making everything about race. It's like, you might want to ask yourself, are people making it about race, or is it the system? Because it's already been here. It might not have been here for you because it never was your experience. And it wasn't something, you know, that you even had to think about, versus, you know, some of us, that's just the life that we were already living from the time, you know, that we were small or had the realization that, you know, oh wait, I'm Black in this world and not everybody looks at me like a human being. So when you don't have that perspective and that lens, it makes it tricky, because really the anti-racism work and allyship lies mostly in white people. You really have to be aware on a different level. The rest of us, we're already aware because we live it. We don't have a choice but to be aware. But the problem is we didn't build these systems. We didn't create these systems. So we're not going to really see proper change until the people who are kind of responsible for the system start saying, yeah, this is a problem. We're having an issue with this.
So all of this stuff that you're saying is, I mean, it's right on. And is this why, like, you kind of went into the studies that you're in now, the criminology and in this space? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you're preparing yourself for, your studies? And then what does this work look like? What does anti-racism, what does activism look like as you transition into Loyola in Chicago?
After I complete my undergraduate studies, I plan on going to law school. With being able to go to law school, you can practically major in anything that you really want. So I thought, well, you know, it's college. This is the time of learning. And this is the time where you can kind of specialize, you know, your educational interests. And one of the things I've been super passionate about is the criminal justice system. And working on reforming the criminal justice system and the activism on the criminal justice side, I thought, well, you know, how am I going to attempt to even take down a system if I don't even know the backbone, the true history, you know, of the system and how it got to be where it is today. Being able to understand the past and the history of it will help me to find the solutions and back up why, you know, things need to be changed. Mm-hmm. Can't just stand here and say, it's flawed, it's wrong, right? Because when somebody asks you, how is the criminal justice system flawed? I want to be able to have a concrete Harry Potter novel list of things to say, and specifically about how race disproportionately affects people of color, specifically Black men and Black and brown children. Mm-hmm. Just seeing how Black people don't make up the majority of this country, but we make up the majority of like jails and prison systems. And for me, my background knowledge is with like juveniles and just kind of doing a lot of research and work even prior to college on like the school to prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. It's a very easy and straightforward path. Being able, I guess, for me, really to be able to study criminology is just to get a better understanding. And also, again, being at an all-girls school, I could take classes specifically on like gender-specific crime, you know, domestic violence, sexual assault. So it's kind of like the criminology and criminal justice has like all of my social justice, all of my advocate passions all in one, you know, even down to psychology and criminology. And so that is just something that I want to be able to take forward in my future. And I always say like my life motto is just, I'm going to change the world one trial at a time. That's something that I've just always said, because that's just what.
Love it. So powerful.
That's just always been my goal. And I think for me, growing up my whole life, I always just knew that I wanted to step into a career where I would be able to do what I love to do and also help people and create change. So for me, heading to law school and becoming a lawyer, don't know which kind yet. To me, it's about combining all of the things that I love. I love going to school. I love learning. So you have your educational aspect there, you know, with the writing and the legal work and being able to help people and transform lives. And at the end of my life, if I could just change one person's life for the better, then I've done something. Then my hard work has paid off, you know, being able to make an impact. And I say, like, another one of my mottos is every day I make the choice to use my voice. That to me is just the overall outlook on my life and where I hope to go and end up at the end of all this.
So Kaseba, as we get ready to wrap up the conversation today, I would love to know, like, what inspires you? What like keeps you going as we're in these crazy times with all of this madness happening? You have such a beautiful light and a beautiful vision for the change that you want to bring in the world. What inspires you and how, what keeps you going?
What inspires me, honestly, are the people who came before me, the people who paved the way before me. And that's something that charges me for the future and why I want to do what I want to do, because I just had this thought and I said, you know, people like Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, Malcolm X, all of these incredible civil rights leaders, they fought incredibly hard despite the circumstances that they were in. Mm-hmm. And to me, it really just moves me, and it is so empowering that people came together despite the lynchings, the all of these horrific things that I don't have to necessarily go through right now. They fought so hard for something that they would never be able to experience. And so when I sit on that and I think about imagining what would have happened if the idea was, what is the point? You know, mm-hmm. we're not seen as human beings in this. What is the point? We're not, we probably might not even be alive to interact in a world that is, you know, integrated. And to just think that the mindset that they truly cared about the greater good and they truly cared about change because they wanted things to be better. That is really truly what drives me. And when I look at my friends, the diverse group of friends that I have, I'm thinking, I would not have been able to be this close to you right now in public and it not be an issue. And for me, I have to keep fighting because will I see a world or a country where equality has been met on every level? No, maybe, I would hope so. But to me, knowing that like I also in the future want to have kids, I want to make sure that the world is a better place for them, their friends, their future families. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, just because I might not experience it, what's the point fighting a lost cause? No, because if it was a lost cause, I wouldn't even be here right now, or we'd still be going through some of the craziest things. So for me, it's just kind of you, when you truly believe in the greater good and when you truly believe in humanity and believing that human beings are capable of peace, of unity, of loving one another, that is all you need to keep going forward and to keep fighting.
Amazing. Kaseba, thank you so much for sharing that. So for the people who are looking to find their everyday activism, their everyday anti-racism, what advice do you have for them to start, to take this step, to start and figure out where they can make a difference, where they can make an impact?
It starts with self-reflection. At the end of every day, look at the interactions that you've had, you know, with people, specifically people who are different than you, and ask yourself some questions like, how did I react to this? How did they react to me? What thoughts came from their reactions? Were you judging their actions and their characteristics? Or were you already kind of jumping back into, that's how they are, right? Checking yourself for your own biases, that would be the first step. The second step I would say is diversify your life. Be open to, you know, your resources. Use them. We have so many. Books are a great, you know, resource for people who, you know, may not trust the media and this and that. Books. Read books. Watch documentaries. And the last thing I would say is always have the mindset that when someone does you wrong, when you have these negative experiences with certain people, to remember, those are the negative experiences that you had with the individual. Look at every individual that you meet with a blank slate. And remember, you have the right to, you know, judge somebody based off of their negative actions. But you have to stick with that. It can't be, you know, so-and-so did this. And it's not surprising. Again, you got to ask yourself the questions, right? It's about the individual. That person don't like their behavior. I don't like their attitude. It has nothing to do with the skin color, their hair, sexual orientation, their mm-hmm. body size. It has everything to do with them and their behavior. It doesn't have anything to do with this group of people and the group as a whole. Right. Just them. Leave it at that. Because when you do that, you're truly going to begin the work of truly being an anti-racist. It's an everyday thing. It's an everyday thing.
Absolutely. Kaseba, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your insights and your beautiful personality with us today. So if people want to follow you, follow your work, where can they find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at Kaseba underscore Chibwith, and you can find me on LinkedIn under Kaseba Chibwith.
Great, thank you. We'll put all that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Kaseba. We will be following you. We're so excited to see the change that you make in this world. Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.